Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truths and possibly even the myths of the people and events who have created the Sunshine City. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Rui Frias, and I have the best, maybe one of the best jobs in town as the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. The museum has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for 102 years, and we're happy to share those stories with you here on Radio St. Pete. So for generations, people have visited history museums all over the world. Our own St. Pete History Museum is the oldest museum in Pinellas County and the third oldest in the state of Florida. As you explore museum galleries, I mean, do you ever wonder why or how they exhibit what they do? As a young boy growing up in downtown St. Pete, I used to frequent the Museum of History nearly every Saturday. Back then, it was like your grandparents' attic, right? Filled sometimes in no rhyme or reason with stuff that you just got to play with. But this has definitely changed, right? Time has definitely changed. Museums today are fantastic teaching and entertainment tools that rely on not just thematic exhibits, but massive technology to share a message with its visitors. And the creation of a museum exhibit is the final product of months or years of research, design, writing, fabrication, and a little luck. We're fortunate that we have a firm here in Pinellas County that is regarded as one of the best museum exhibit creation teams in the nation. And today's guest on Historically St. Pete is Roger Bargonier, president and the artistic genius behind Creative Arts Unlimited. Welcome, Roger. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is a first for me.
So how do you wake up one day and decide, I'm going to design and create world-class exhibits for museums across the country, and that's what I want to do?
Yeah, that's not how it works at all. Okay. That wasn't in the glimmer of what I thought would happen when I started this. I was an illustrator. I was an illustration student as a young man at Ringling School of Art, and I thought I would be an illustrator so I could, you know, have food on the table and have a career. So I got into commercial art, and illustration was the way to go. But that led to graphic design and advertising and retail. And the whole thing is a transition of the world and moments of change at the time. So what started out as retail department stores ended up now into, like, you know, encompasses museums. And that was because, like, sometime in the late 80s, everybody started to go into everybody else's trade shows. That's what that would be my answer.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So let's talk about Creative Arts. I mean, how did Creative Arts get started?
Oh, well, with the department store thing. A company that was called Creative Foam Products in St. Pete at the time did a lot of the props. They had a technology for CAD/CAM for a program in cutting big styrofoam shapes, which was a new technology. So they were a vendor of mine. And when Moss Brothers, you know, spiraled down, went to Miami, I mean, the demise of the department store era, I jumped ship and we started doing that using Creative Foam. I was their creative director. And then I used my contacts in the business. So we started making props and visuals for all the department stores in the country, and then that led to fixtures. So we started a wood department. So that's how we, you know, everything that I'd worked for and did for 7 years prior got lumped into one thing, and now we, you know, developed a company to service department stores. That led to museums, that led to libraries, the whole culture, you know, all the theme parks and Vegas. We just happened to be at, you know, the right place at the right time with what we did.
So I gotta admit, the first time, so there, you know, you're located in North St. Pete off US 19, and the first time I pulled up to go meet with you guys, I looked at the building and went, oh my God, I grew up playing indoor soccer in this building, right?
So it's an old mattress warehouse from the 90s. It's been a great building. It's a big old metal building with tall ceilings and close to the interstate and whatnot. So that's serviced as well. But I didn't know that history behind that, though. That's special now. We've been there a while.
So let's discuss the process. I mean, how do you turn an idea, for instance, of pirates into the pirate exhibit at Tampa Bay History Center? Or how do you allow a crazy man who's collected 5,000 baseballs, right, how do you turn that into the little Cooperstown exhibit at the Museum of History? What's the process there?
That's a day in the life of what you just described. It depends upon who it is. And we kind of specialize in cultural, historical museums, you know, $5 million and down build-outs, you know, interiors. But it starts with the collection, and then it also, from there, but basically I take notes. I listen and I take notes, and the staff comes in and just, like, I hear this full stream of consciousness, whatever, from the clients or the owners. So you listen, And then you kind of get them to answer certain questions like, you know, who is the audience, and what is your collection, and what do you want to say in this? So we make columns and lists, and then we make us, after that, we might make a sketch, and they go, like, wow, you read our mind. How did you know this? It's like, well, you told us here on my legal path. So it's like having a suit made is how I describe it. Every client is different. Every group is different. But you start out with the same process, and then they will tell you the basics, and you help them develop it. So it depends on those factors. I've never done two of the same thing in our career. I wish I could sometimes, but it's always different.
Yeah, but that could be boring. I mean,
boring is not bad all the time.
You're this creative guy. I mean, it's amazing the stuff you guys have built.
Well, I have a partner that I have to make money at this.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The whole money thing. Yes. So what has been your most difficult project?
That's a tough one. Possibly with it depends on the client and pleasing the client and setting expectations. It could have been where there are an instance. I'm not naming names, but in healthcare sometimes there are maybe 40 people down to the nurses that make the decisions about the design.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to say this is a while back, but we did a nursery rhyme theme, pretty basic. Of the cow jump, and there was a big thing of a dimensional cow jumping over the moon about 30 feet up in the air. And looked nice, looked like the pictures we gave him. But maybe like 2 months later, we get this really urgent call that the nurses wanted us to remove this disgusting cow, that why are these udders showing, that this is just horrible. And we had to go do an udderdectomy on a scaffold up in the 30 feet up in the air. But then everything else, the nursing staff also got involved in kerning and type spacing and type sizes. So it took me, it was a good client, so I had to be nice. But things like that, when you get big committees, it's tough.
But what about challenging then? What was like your most challenging project?
Challenging has to do with like the technology.
Sure,
sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
And I've learned, you know, through trial and error, you don't want to go way, way out on the latest of technology, right? A little company has to fail small. So I got involved in one project that was things I didn't even know if we could do it. I was pretty sure that we could do it. But when it got it down to like, make this globe and put every point of the earth on this globe. And then if you touch that point on the earth, then it will project on the wall with a famous animal of that that continent or that place.
Oh my.
So we did it, but that was like the most difficult thing that I wasn't sure where that one was gonna fly. And that's why I learned a lot too on that is like, you on technology, it only lasts for about 2 months. I mean, as soon as you put something, sure, the latest thing out there, by the time you do it, it's like ho-hum. So we try to think of ways to like get our stories across. If we do use technology, we make it where, okay, this is plug and play. When things change, we can plug this in and change it. It won't have to change the whole exhibit.
So do you get museums that come to you and say, I want this? And you kind of look at them and go, never.
No. You never say never. The thing is to listen a lot before you say anything. Because when you deal with, like, particularly when you don't deal with designers, when you deal with owners, and I do this every project, you will have these groups that are very passionate about what they want, and they've seen something, and they want to express to you this thing that they want to recreate. And there's lots of that. There's maybe, you know, 10 different inputs of that kind of information. You just have to, like, put what you know. I tell my staff this. It's like, do the right thing. Take what they say, and then give them what they need and what really works, and then explain it. You know, we'll do anything that you want, but like, here is the professional way you should go about it. We don't do anything trendy. It's going to last 10 years. You're going to be able to update it. All those things that they don't know is even coming, you know, we'll explain that to them. So it's a lot of patience, and I think a lot of managing clients and having, you know, we like to deal with people. We like people, and most everybody is an armchair historian or naturalist at, sure, Creative Arts. The wood shop is full of turtle shells and manatee skulls. And they love Florida. So we do a lot of Florida stuff.
So what has been your most like weird or unique project that you guys have built?
The next one's always my favorite one, is what I say. But right now, it's one that I'm making now. And you know, I started out as an illustrator, so I love, you know, illustration and painting is my thing. So we're getting good at, you always look for like inexpensive things to twist in a way that makes it look more expensive, make it affordable, but make it different. We're doing a couple of libraries, one in particular out in Texas, outside of Dallas. And it's kind of the Texas version of Alice Through the Looking Glass, if you can imagine that.
No.
No. And it's there's a lot of, like, a couple of longhorns in there, and as you could imagine what Texas might look. But the neat thing about it, it's all done in printed, multi-level sheet good pieces, like Sintra printed. But then it has LED neon worked into all of it. So what's cool about the LED neon, you kind of chart these new materials, like when things can be affordable and when they work and all that. So right now, the LED neon is dependable. So we are, and then you can program it. So it's a great look for only with Sintra and LED can I get these wild, crazy looks, and it's affordable. So that's gotcha. Part of my thing is like experimentation and figuring out how I can do it and then do it for a price that the clients can afford.
So we mentioned the baseball exhibit, right, at the Museum of History. There's a project that we haven't put up yet that is finished, and I want to talk about that for a second. And we'll probably wait till after next week to see what happens before we move forward with it. So you've been working on, or you've created a pretty unique mural that's going to be put on the north wall of the Museum of History.
That kind of goes in with what I'm talking about. I'm doing this kind of out of spite as part of how I operate to get to do something really different. And the closest thing to this could be something we may have done for Disney or for F.L. Schwartz in New York in the 90s. It's a dimensional mural. So this is with a client, an old friend of both of ours. His son got involved. And Jackson Willis, he designed the imagery. So it's the history of St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to take it next level. And, you know, it's dimensional. It's got motion. It's got lights. So it's a 3D animated mural that if you were sitting in the Vinoy up on the roof, you'd just go like, what is happening over there? I have to go to that place because it's lighting up the yacht basin at nighttime. So that was like, that appealed to my spite and my like, I need to do that. So hopefully, you know, we've got all the pieces are in the shop ready to go. It's just a matter of, you know, installation at this point. So
I think I'm obviously we'll you know release through the media when we're going to hang it and have huge parties because it will be the most unique mural
yes.
in St. Petersburg.
There's not one of those within 200 miles of here for sure.
No, and at one time I know that you guys added some sound to it, and you know, we kind of got notified by the city that we couldn't have this clock chime every
sure.
hour.
Oh, it wasn't clock chiming. It was a steam locomotive.
The steam, that's right.
And an
that's
airplane right. taking off every hour.
So. Yeah. So no. We had to taper that down a wee bit.
We can always add that later.
True. We look forward to that. So hopefully in the next month or so, you guys will be installing that thing up there.
Great.
So let's talk about museum men. We were honored as from the Museum of History. We were kind of, you know, because you know our 3,000-year-old Egyptian mummy that we have that we've had for nearly 100 years in the museum. We were honored to be like the guinea pig for this show, this TV show. So tell us about the show. How did this thing come about? I thought it was a great idea, actually. And I got to tell you the story. It's a true story. So I was outside, you know, big oak trees in my yard. I'm raking oak trees, or the leaves rather from the oak trees, you know, which you always cuss under your breath, right? Twice a year to do this. My neighbor comes across the street who had just been in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. He comes up to me, goes, "Hey, I just saw you on TV." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "We were down in Rio, and I saw you your mummy TV show on TV." I'm like, "That was like 4 years ago."
Oh yeah,
but it's still running.
It's out there in the world. I love it when you get like hear your voice dubbed in Japanese or German or Italian. That was fun. We had nothing to do with that, honestly. A phone rang and somebody said that, and I hung up. It's like there's a crank call. It's pressing this. What is it? And they called back. But it was a production company out in California that was their idea. I have no idea how they found us. They interviewed and talked to us. Chuck, my business partner, you know him, he's a banker. He had nothing to do with this, that this was like degrading and we would be made buffoons. It's like, so it almost didn't happen. They kind of talked us into it. But it turned out pretty good. The producer, one of the producers was, he was a journalist maybe in Boston. So we hit it off. He's a history guy. So he did it in a way that even though it was a reality show and there's all this kind of drama stuff happening, he respected the history part of it. So we got to actually do some things, and we had to build that stuff. They wanted to have carpenters come. It's like, no way. So my guys loved it, even though some of them lost like 17 pounds over the summer. They worked all the time. But we built all that stuff. You know, the big builds were done, you know, in-house. So it was a pleasant, unexpected experience, but we had nothing to do with
it. So, I mean, it aired on the History Channel, right? And it was this great reality show on how museums were built, basically.
It showed, like, you know, how you went through a build and you talked to the directors, like, with your part. So it gave you a good idea. It gave the general public a kind of an idea of how things work behind the scenes and showed the real shop and our real people, you know. So, and then other museums got to use those builds, you know, like Tampa got the submarine and we sent some stuff up to Tennessee. So it was a good experience.
We got King Tut, which we tried to explain for years why we had King Tut in the St. Petersburg Museum of History, hey, it worked.
Right? So anyway, that was just one of the weird things that happen in life if you stay in business long enough.
So we're honored to have hired Creative Arts to build, design and build our next exhibit. We're working on a new exhibit that will fill our main gallery. The exhibit's called Explore Florida, and it is about a 4,000 square foot exhibit that talks about the history of Florida, but mostly how St. Petersburg and Pinellas kind of relates to that history. So it's not just St. Pete centric; it's statewide with a huge push to St. Petersburg. We're looking forward to. I mean, this is and for your people listening. I mean, this takes a year to put together and to build.
Oh yeah,
we don't just throw these things together. So, other than that, I mean, what other projects do you have that are coming down the pipeline that are pretty cool?
You know, our circle of life is you're always talking about a job, sketching a job, producing a job, shipping a job. So right now, the fun ones, we've got a nice Veterans Museum over in Tampa. We're talking about the state fairground, wants to do some stuff with the State of Florida Forestry and Cattlemen's Association. We've got Boca Grande is doing a nice little jewel box of a museum. I just finished a float. That's another spiteful thing. Since I come from a Mardi Gras culture, we've done two floats for organizations that are parading in Gasparilla now. So eventually, before I retire, I'm going for five. So there's always, I don't know what we're going to get, you know, depends on what day you go in and who calls on the phone. But right now, you know, I have to keep about five of those big ones going all the time. The Bay of Pigs Museum in Miami, they're doing a big build out. So there's usually about, you know, five major jobs, maybe about 10, you know, middle jobs and a handful of little jobs that keep going through. But I can never tell you exactly, you know, what's going to – that's what makes it fun. You don't know what's going to happen from day to day, who's going to call in.
And you guys have done – I mean, granted, you know, the museum work you've done has been phenomenal. But you've done other stuff. I mean, you've done restaurants, right? You've designed –
Well, it's experiential design. We actually even mentor Ringling has started over the last couple of years. They started an entertainment design department.
Oh, wow.
So they're actually teaching kids how to do what we do, what we've been doing for 30 years. So that involves, like, is it a theme park? Is it a restaurant? Is it an ice cream parlor? Anything that has an experiential element to where a client or a visitor is immersed in that environment is something that we get involved in. So it's the same thing. You know, no matter what the consumer is, you're covering some of these same basics, and that is to experience that brand, you know, in an immersive way. So we just kind of see, okay, well, that hospital thing for kids, that works for us, and, you know, this ice cream shop works for us, or this bar works for us. And those are usually people that have found us that need something weird that they can't get it from a regular interior designer, that they don't understand, the interior designer doesn't understand what they're talking about. So those are the fun ones that, you know, we get. But a few of those.
So there you go. So if you want something weird.
Yeah, we do a lot of weird.
Get a hold of Roger at Creative Arts Unlimited. He'll take care of you.
Yeah.
So Roger, thank you so much for joining us on Historically St. Pete and sharing this amazing information with us. I invite everyone to tune in weekly to Radio St. Pete for Historically St. Pete and stop by the Museum of History on your next visit to the St. Pete Pier, where you'll explore the rich and unique history of the Sunshine City. Visit historystpete.org for more details on our exhibits and events. And once again, thank you for listening and join us next week on Historically St. Pete.